Hey there, and welcome into Better Advertising with Better Media, a podcast for brand founders and marketers to share strategies and stories that have helped us grow brands in the marketplace world we're living in and selling in today, the world of Amazon and Walmart. My name is Justin Knuckles, and I'm your host here on the show, and I also work with a variety of clients here at Better Media as an account director. Today's episode is an in-depth conversation between our own Better Media COO, Alex Amos, and digital marketer, Bobby Rieger. Bobby is experienced in growing e-commerce brands through seemingly every avenue of modern marketing, PPC advertising to affiliate influencer marketing. Bobby was a large part of scaling a private label brand from $3 million a year to over $35 million a year. But before we get to Bobby, let's start with you, Alex, since this is your debut on the podcast. I want to let everyone know who the lifeblood of Better Media is, who gets things done and keeps us running. So
keeps the train running on time. Yeah. That's the W I'm happy
Dude,
to claim.
Dude, you're the magic of Better Media. Let's let everyone in on the magic.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. An awesome debut with my close friend, Bobby. We've known each other about almost coming up on 6 years now. My time with Better Media has been about five. I came on in the early days joining Destiny and Taylor just as another account executive ad specialist on the team. And shortly after joining is when we decided to all meet up and decide, hey, like let's build something. Like this is fun. Let's get a few more people on the train. And you know, that's evolved over the years from just the three of us kind of winging it into becoming a partner in late 2021 as our team scaled into eventually as a co-owner with Destiny. Late last year as Taylor looked to leave the business, and we decided to evolve from Better AMS to Better Media. My day-to-day is spent really over keeping the trains running on time. That includes kind of diving into everything on client service, product, or ad tech, and you know, finance, legal, and the little bit of HR we have as a team of 25. They're very fortunate for very little of that.
Yeah, you've had your hand in every pot possible, and you've been really at the driver's seat for longer than the last year. So I think everybody here deserves or owes you a round of applause for all you do for us. So
appreciate it.
And it's because of you that we're sitting here with Bobby. As you mentioned, y'all are good friends and have been working together in the past. So Bobby, I want to throw it over to you. I touched on your experience a little bit, but let's go back to when you and Alex met, just your general experience in the marketing e-commerce world.
Yeah, so I'll go super fast, but way back. I started studying computer science in college and was in tech for a little while. So I have kind of that logic-based background. I've led some agile sprint teams in Jira and things like that before. Not like a true programmer, engineer or anything, but enough to understand what's happening. And so eventually kind of shifted out of the tech side into the more e-commerce world. And that's when I eventually met Alex. And so Alex is calling him for you. You know, he sounds like he's trying to say he's not doing a lot, but he's a hustler for sure. And so, you know, that was interesting. I feel like he was a little handcuffed initially. And now you can see as he expands his horizons there, what he's able to do. So in my perspective and that is I really am at the highest level, what I would call growth in marketing, right? Is like, I'm not particularly in one discipline and I will switch around all over the place. And so whether it be Amazon, other online marketplaces, I've worked in Chewy and Walmart and things like that, to more on the marketing strategy, product development, go to market, XYZ, right? And so more at like the strategic consultant level of what needs to be done to grow this in a profitable manner. What are the blockers? What are the low-hanging fruit? That nature is kind of my thought pattern and my specialty.
So what I'm taking away is you're ready for a CMO role at a big brand. You know everything in marketing. No, that's really cool. It keeps things fun, keeps things interesting. You get to learn things all the time, which is exactly what we're here to talk about. So exactly when did that transition from tech into e-commerce happen? Just to frame it up into where we were in the e-commerce world as of late.
Yeah, so I have always been a little into whether it's digital or kind of tabletop gaming. And I had moved out to Texas at different points, to Houston, to work kind of in the TCG space on like a physical tech type product. And then also worked at an online tournament startup hosting paid tournaments for games like League of Legends. And so more in that space, I was in the influencer Twitch streamer type of thing, right? Takeovers, you know, working with people like Trick2G, people might know, in that nature, supporting the program. And so that was my kind of initial background. You know, I got my MBA, so I have that traditional marketing background meets kind of the gaming world and digital marketing startup area. And I had some family issues that I needed to move back east for. And so I needed something near from the kind of Atlanta to Charlotte area. So I was looking for jobs in the region and just kind of stumbled across, hey, this is an e-commerce job, right? But it's using all of my marketing skills. And so from that is kind of where I just happenstance transitioned from general kind of marketing to more of an e-commerce focus.
And was that first company Natural Dog Co. where you guys had met?
Yeah, I guess we should talk about that. That's a little confusing here. So at the time, it was Elements Brands. And think of it as the kind of, I mean, I know your audience is very familiar with Amazon aggregators, but prior to just Amazon aggregation, this was a full portfolio holding company. And so would either build initially some of the brands and then acquire brands, running full ownership across multiple platforms, omni-channel, retail, wholesale, digital, online platforms, etc. Natural Dog Company being one of the brands we acquired in, I believe, the very end of 2018.
Okay. And Alex, where were you in that picture?
Think mini Procter & Gamble at a much smaller level, but before things like Thrasio and Perch became kind of mainstream.
Okay. So Natural Dog Company, which is going to be a huge topic of conversation here, and the manner in which you scaled that, was that one of the projects you took on? Was you guys acquired them and it was your job to continue their growth? Got it. So I guess let's start there. Let's share the story of how you scaled that. And according to the numbers here, 3 million a year up to 35 to 50 million a year. Walk us through that story.
Yeah, I can kind of start at the beginning. It was one of the larger brands, you know, you're thinking paying on a multiple of them doing 3 million a year at the point of being acquired. And so it really was kind of like a do or die moment for Elements Brands in general, of being like, hey, if we buy this and don't scale it, I don't know if Elements Brands will exist, right? And so one of the kind of foundational elements for Elements Brands is companies that have good products, good branding, XYZ, but lack digital knowledge. They don't know how to scale. They don't know how to run on Amazon, right? And so kind of my job is to look at that brand, perform due diligence and say, is there something here? And if we take the team's knowledge and focus and skills, can we just hyperscale that, right? And so it went from a brand in kind of this middle of nowhere town in Texas being produced in kind of this like cabin where they had this kind of makeshift pouring setup to needing to move to Charlotte and production at the same time as the digital scaling. And so really full brand refresh, right? In going from this terribly outdated WordPress WooCommerce website setup that barely functioned. One of those first projects was migration to Shopify Plus and everything in between. So, you know, I'll give Alex a second here. I can go into more of the details and tactics, but what are your thoughts on that?
I would say the whole thesis at Elements Brands was those, you know, it was a hold co of, I don't know, probably half a dozen, maybe 8 to 10, like sub $1 million EBITDA brands. And this was like the do or die moment, like Bobby had pointed out. Yeah, I think as far as kind of staging the scenario here of what we're working with, these are brands where like it had started to exceed like the founder's capacity, and they reached kind of the point of like their passion, right? So these are all things that people started with like a super specific pain point in mind. Like Natural Dog Company was looking for like natural organic remedies for dog skin conditions, like on their skin, on their paws. And they had developed a formula of essential oils and creams to do that naturally without any harmful chemicals. And, you know, our job was, we did it. It was a big moment for the company of, are we going to take this and are we going to run? And probably the best playground as far as getting into kind of where Bobby and I come in, and to kind of zoom out a little bit, Bobby and I have never worked together or hand in hand, where I've always been in very Amazon centric roles and he's had the broader marketing. But over the time, as our friendship has developed, like we talk about the same pain points and there's so much similarities. Like we know, Justin, like on the team with our clients, right? Like the number one thing, like our biggest pain point when we're, you know, deploying media or in how we're looking at that media performs is usually almost everything except the media, right? Are the product pages up? It's everything else that they're doing in e-commerce. And if they're doing those things, just the fact that those things they're doing contributes massively to our success, right? If they figured out how to do retail, if they figured out how to optimize external traffic that comes to Amazon. And so just kind of shaping up like this is where the dynamic comes into play, where I'm the guy in the Amazon silo here, you know, ready to kind of take on this huge challenge. Bobby's got everything else. And that's where our friendship kind of forms over time as well, where we're kind of sharing like war stories and, you know, the typical pain points of the day to day. And there's just an unbelievable amount of similarities. And I think as we get through this conversation, we'll find like there's a lot of things that brands can do from a marketing perspective that they're maybe misunderstanding or looking at the wrong way right now. And even how that contributes back to our success on Amazon, and that Amazon can translate to almost any marketplace here, right? Amazon, Walmart, Instacart, et cetera.
Yeah. Large part of both of our roles is educating people on how to properly use marketing and think of marketing. So, sounds like a common denominator across everybody here. What were some of those big moments along the way from 3 million to 35, 50 million? And how long did that take? And also, Alex, I want your opinion too on this and what part Amazon played in all this.
Yeah, I'll say some big moments. Initially, like moving the website was huge. And it was a pretty big undertaking because there's a lot of SEO value in the blog coming out of it. I think 25% of all traffic was coming from a few pages as far as digital traffic to the website. So nailing that. A quick win was just like the foundational Amazon components. And I know Alex can speak this a little more, but just like, hey, are we actually keeping product in stock? Like, are we just having our 100% system set up? Like, you know, they were running, they'd send in some product, things would go out of stock. Send in some different products, things would go out of stock, right? So that was a big component. But when you talk about the transition of kind of the marketing aspect of it, it's kind of multifold in the sense of, one, the old school style of advertising that you're not allowed to do on social media anymore of the before and after pictures. You can do those with dogs. And so we would have all these amazing success stories of look at this rash on this dog. Look at the condition of this dog's nose, and using these products clears it up, right? So from literally the split side-by-side ad to the video before and after dogs running around, all of that, that was kind of the first unlock in the era of pre-iOS 14 and all that stuff, when you could print money through Facebook ads. It wasn't Meta yet at the time, right? And so, you know, we went from spending almost nothing on social to profitably spending millions a year in customer acquisition. So that was definitely a huge component. And then the other aspect of it is, you know, shout out to Allison Kelly, who also worked at the company, just really taking the brand and like dialing that in, right? Is like, we have a brand style guide. This is what the voice is. This is the color palette. This is how we talk to our customers. They're not just customers, they're pet parents, and they care about these issues, right? And so, you know, this is something I talked to Alex about all the time, as he kind of just mentioned, and I think will be so important as the discussion goes on for these Amazon brands, is like, just spending a bunch more money isn't going to get you there if your foundations aren't set. So that hits a few of the highlights. But yeah, I'll let Alex maybe go into some of the more Amazon-centric ones.
Yeah. So coming into Natural Dog, you were about a $3 million business. And if I recall correctly, our revenue split was around 40-60 Amazon to .com. And over time, I think we got that up to 50, maybe 60. I dipped out on that journey early to join then Better AMS, but now Better Media. So my snapshot is limited to kind of up through the end of 2019. But if I had to kind of put an easy theme on it is, you know, guys, there's not a golden nugget here. It really was back to the basics that matter. So the immediate things, like through the integration process, one, it's like fascinating what happens operationally, but like really dialing in things like inventory consistency was a big one. Catalog optimization was probably one of my favorite takeaways. You know, we were offering products for like $6. I don't even think we were in small and light, like deliberately. So just a ton of products that didn't make sense to be advertising. We didn't do anything with like a bigger size variation or a multi-pack. And we found out there was a decent B2B audiences. B2B in this case was like rescue shelters, right? They were buying 10 of our paw cream or the paw soothers. And so huge opportunity there. Like, you know, multi-packs was a great way to scale, offer a discount and increase margin. So that was a big one, as well as create a few Amazon only specific offerings. The rebrand or the brand elevation, definitely spearheaded by our good friend Allison and a few others on that creative team. But you know, from an aggregator perspective or a holdco perspective, it was that gold mine because we came in and we're like, kind of like, we wouldn't do this in this case with Better Media, but we saw terrible PDPs, lack of catalog organization. We were excited because we knew we had a playground to go with. Whereas today, we're kind of like, hey, you know what? Those have to be buttoned up for us to come in and do our jobs well. But going in and giving every piece of content or every PDP A+ content was a huge, giving it, you know, 6 to 7 pictures with a video. Another one? New product development. So we entered the supplement line pretty early on after acquiring the business. We came right into the market pretty hot. Fun thing I learned in that is that you cannot launch a supplement, with, you know, only $50 a day. In auto campaigns, and even then it was competitive. I mean, we were looking at $4 to $5 CPCs then, and I think most of those are damn near double now.
I can speak to some of those strategies after you made your exit there, Alex.
Let's do backstory.
You guys tell me, has anyone ever talked about the garlic press guy on Amazon, the Zuleus Kitchen experiment on your podcast?
Yeah, Aaron Cordova. Yeah. He's a close friend of Destiny.
Okay. So you guys know it then, right? So I won't go too deep into it. But kind of one of the same strategies there in the sense was, okay, we are launching salmon oil. How are we going to just, you know, make this happen, right? Which I think it will be interesting to people looking to spend on Amazon, because so many times I see people that are just like, oh, we just want to spend to get some sales, right? But there's not a larger strategy in place of what is our spend actually working toward. And so the goal on the salmon oil launch was we're going to just run so much advertising. We're not going to try to lose too much money on it, right? But we just want to spike it for the first 3 to 6 months of the launch, and see if we can basically buy our way into an organic ranking spot for salmon oil, because we know that the keyword is so searched. It's a huge driver. And so that's what we did. We just went hard coming out of the gate, had all the non-Amazon related traffic. We had dog influencers that are like, you know, social media accounts for dogs that were part of our program, everything from that to the on Amazon advertising. And we were able to do it. I think for a while we were around 1 or 2, and then we settled in at around 3. So that was a huge kind of go-to-market strategy that worked out pretty well.
A large part of this was modernizing the brand, just bringing it up to a competitive standpoint, like we're we've been saying that, you know, we need our listings to be able to do on advertising to make them worthwhile on ad spend. But that's half of the battle. And then the other half of it was deploying a lot of these conversion rate tactics, right? Making sure that you could close the deal, making sure that you could reach the right audience with these modern strategies like social media. So this could take us down two streets here, but you know, what was more important to it? The external traffic and growing the brand to new people, these new pet parents, or was it the conversion rate optimization? I'm sure we're going to dive into both topics. So
Yeah, I would say a big component here when you talk about the branding and company structure and all that is not just overarching, which is also large, but kind of getting into these larger P&G type corporation strategies of product category alignment. And so instead of just also launching whatever product we thought had a bunch of potential, we would try to line it up in a strategy that drove kind of a higher AOV LTV. And so if we know, okay, customers are coming in and buying Skin Soother, but it takes a while because you only have to use so little of the Skin Soother to solve the issue, can we sell them other products that also treat skin conditions to then be a preventative measure? And this becomes our skin product line, kind of like you would see in like acne care or hair care or things like that, right? You would span across different products, but be able to upsell, cross-sell the customer because they know their pet needs that condition treated. And so that was a huge component of being able to scale that growth. Is we had great, really, from the beginning, once we kind of found that unlock, and there were maybe 3 to 5 different really ad types and conversion tactics that worked. But we didn't have the highest price point on our product, and it was a slow reorder frequency rate, right? So being able to keep that same low CAC, high conversion, but increase the AOV and purchase rate was massive in fueling that ability to spend because we could kind of ride that wave faster to recoup the dollars. So that was a large facilitator that I think is missing from a lot of other brands I've worked with.
The cross-selling ability driving a huge portion of that revenue growth, yeah.
There's an analogy of, are you selling pain medicine or are you selling vitamins, right? Like, are you selling a cure or are you selling like preventative? And so that business was very much tied up in the cures, right? Like, you were coming because your dog had some type of ailment. And I think a big part of that opportunity unlocked was what, in this analogy, the preventative part, right? Like, your dog has skin issues, salmon oil is a great preventative to that, right? The omega-3s and omega-6s and that are really beneficial to them. To kind of answering your opening question though too, I think, you know, it can't be one or the other as far as which was more effective, right? Like the conversion rate optimization efforts that went in versus the external traffic, because you can't do one without the other, right? Like, the external traffic would have been a total flop, anything we were doing on that side, if we didn't do everything we did on Amazon. So I almost view it as like a revenue optimization by way of conversion rate optimization, by starting over there and getting those ducks buttoned up, ducks in a row, it made everything else that much more easy but effective.
Yeah, you can't have one without the other.
100%.
Absolutely. And Bobby, back to you, outside of Amazon, because I know we've been kind of laser focused here, what efforts were you doing outside of Amazon for Natural Dog Co? I know I've seen them pretty much every retail place you can go for dog products now. So what part were you in growing that effort?
Yeah, so basically, you know, the team toward the end, and we've kind of got to lay back out the aspect of Natural Dog Company is the priority of the team. But the team I was leading was around 22 at the end, but we're also supporting these other brands, right? And so just to give you a breakdown, I kind of ran things in 4-ish departments, which was life cycle and retention, the kind of performance marketing, customer acquisition, the creative and branding, and the development. And so those are kind of the people that would report to me. And then in most instances have a team under them. And so when you think about what I'm doing, it's like, okay, website optimization, right? Is we're developing quizzes to try and help customers find out what products they need based on their dog's skin condition. On the acquisition side, we're building out this affiliate and influencer program around these are dog influencers or different types of partnerships that we want to get into, trying to cross sell with other types of companies. The online marketplace side, we're also in the early stages of Walmart here. It's in Chewy, which I hope is better now. I haven't worked in Chewy since Natural Dog Company, but if you think Amazon is difficult to work in, oh man, Chewy was a whole beast. So, really it's, we haven't touched on this either, but supporting an internal sales team on kind of this mid-tier and independent retail expansion, right? And so calling up shops across the country, getting into small chains, I think at the time it was like Tractor Supply, which is not even related to dogs, right? And then also, speaking across that, like Hollywood Feed and actual, pet specific stores. And so there's a real omni-channel presence. And that's where my focus is, right? Is like, am I lifting everything we're doing? Which, Alex and I have spoken about before. If anyone could ever build the technology to kind of link these together between the online marketplaces and DTC, where now they're so siloed of like, this is my Amazon technology, this is my website technology. That's a huge component for me when I'm looking across, because I'm basically now operating at the contribution margin level across all like digital platforms. And so when we are running ads, I'm looking at some type of halo effect or MER across what lift are we getting on Amazon by just advertising in general, right? And you'll see that vice versa. We started running over-the-top ads on Amazon. We were in DSP early. And so you'll see it the other way too, where you'll get people coming into stores asking about Natural Dog Company that has seen a video ad through Amazon. So at the highest level, yeah, kind of like growing the brand across all the different channels and acquisition streams.
I mean, that just goes to show how much you had your arms around, and kudos to you to have your arms around that much and keep it all straight. I mean, that's impressive. But also shout out to the teams behind all of that, because that had to be a massive expansion. And I think that segues into our next topic here, which is really the marketing leadership and team building that you were a part of in this. So how was it growing a team, and what are we talking about? A few people to a couple dozen people? What did that look like?
Yeah, so I will say it's very much what you need changes so rapidly, right? We experimented with tons of different setups for this, everything from like brand teams to being like, okay, you are a unit, you are focused on this brand, to split by disciplines, to almost split by times of year of when we're focusing on things. And so it's so different. I don't even think a same structured portfolio company, if we had different brands, might have your team structured in a completely different way. It's a very unique setup. So I think the one thing I would say is like, stay agile and fluid, and try to get people on the team that have kind of natural skills, abilities, desire to succeed, hungry to learn more, because it's much easier to teach someone to kind of work in an interface, no matter what it is, as opposed to how they should be thinking in general. But to say all that, I will also say my kind of strong suit is in the more like logics, systems building, biz ops, right? And so I usually would take direct leadership with performance marketers, with developers, things of that nature, and then try to give a more creative direction to those other teams. And so, you know, mentioning Allison again, Allison would definitely be the link there between here's what our designer is working on and translating what kind of I'm thinking from the strategic standpoint to how to work with them as just a different personality type, right? And so kind of learning where you're strong and weak, that's definitely, I'm not as good in more the empathetic leadership style for sure. So kind of using that, and I feel like everyone has something, right? And so finding the way to kind of plug in some of that gap is going to be huge, because it might be different, right? It might be you're really great and empathetic with people, but then it's like, oh, you spend too much time working with each person and you're not getting your own systems done, right? You're having too many one-on-ones and taking too much home from you, right? And it's like, well, now you need someone to come in and be more like structured, hey, here's your deadline, why aren't you hitting your deadline, like the more authoritative person, right, as the reverse of that. So that's my take at the highest level on kind of where we were at from a team building perspective and what we went through.
These are the Culture Friday vibes I love. So and I want to let you speak to this, Alex, because I feel like you have a ton to talk about. It is, I took so many parallels to the Better Media culture and how you guys look for talent. So Alex, I'll let you speak to this.
Yeah. On the topic of a question for Bobby, on the topic of like building a marketing team, you know, we went through multiple evolutions together, you know, functioning as almost an in-house agency where brands are competing for resources to where you described as kind of brand units. So even though we all under one, it's like, okay, you know, there's three or four people, their only job is to look here. And sticking in there, is there a point, and that model shifted, I think, multiple times, you know, from being a sub $5 million holdco, you know, with NatDog coming in to, you know, when you guys were a strong eight-figure portfolio. Is there a point, and when I was there, I think we were more like generalist operator, right? There was a few, we had hired a few specialists, but I think it was really the generalist kind of like hop in, jump in. I mean, like if there's anything for you, and as you're talking about, right, here's like six different areas I covered and had 22 people from developers rolling in, like, I don't know what other word to boil that down to than like, you know, the impact of what a generalist can do touching so many different areas. But as a brand changes and scales, is there a point you feel like where one is better suited than the other, right? Like generalist getting off the ground, and then once, you know, a certain channel or avenue of media can support a specialist that makes sense. Like walk me through that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we focused almost entirely on Natural Dog Company here, right? But let me just sidestep a second to kind of touch to set this up is, okay, we also saw massive growth in a few different other ways, maybe not from 3 to 35 million in under 3 years or whatever it was, but from 4 to 15 million, you know, and so those are unlocks that are kind of in the same way. So there's a brand called Trilastin that had to do with like pregnancy marks and scars and things of that. And we were able to scale that with a lot of maternity-based content, right? Around like these are actually pregnant women, kind of showing off using the preventative cream and things of that nature. Then we also had a huge unlock in launching a specialty detergent. This was in the home goods space. The brand was originally in kind of the cloth diapering baby scene, but launched something called activewear detergent that we were able to push into kind of the upscale athletic fabric space of like the Lululemon, and as it was getting big and whatnot. And using that, showing, hey, look, this is real UGC. These customers just washed these clothes, then they soaked it in Rock and Green. Look at how dirty the water is, right? And so the reason I bring this all up, circling it all back, is like, if you have the generalist, you can ask the basic fundamental questions in marketing, advertising, psychology of what is the positioning of this brand? What are the value propositions that are going to connect with the customer? What objections are they going to have that we have to bust? And what is the like offer CTA we're going to go to, right? And I think that is much better initially, because then you find your hook and you can bring in the specialist to kind of grow your traffic if you need be, right? If you find that you're going to have a very strong influencer acquisition rate, bring in an influencer specialist. If you know you're going to run a ton of money on Amazon, hire a really high-level Amazon agency or get an internal. So I think you want to have generalists until you really have it buttoned up and have poked around to find, like, and then move forward.
So use the generalist to find the 80-20 and then hire the specialist to 80-20 the 20 and go crazy with it. Yeah. I like that. So selfishly, I ask, because we're near an inflection point. I wouldn't say we're there yet, but as more retail media networks become a part of our business, there's two ways we could choose to build out the team. And we've got a few ideas on the way we're leaning and kind of the pros and cons to both. But we can have platform experts, or we can have type of marketing expert. I need to find a better way to word that. But like a very easy comparison would be, do we have people who manage, Amazon and they do Amazon PPC search and DSP? And we compare that to Walmart. Walmart also has a DSP offering through the Trade Desk and Walmart Connect for their search. And we've seen some agencies where they will do platform independent. So you have a full Amazon expert here. I think there's also a neat case to be made as you zoom out into the world of marketing. Programmatic and search are two totally different things with two totally different, potentials, right? The media buying on a programmatic network like Trade Desk is just massive compared to what we can do with PPC and Amazon. Now, you can spend millions in both, but you're only going to come to so many keywords for a product, on the PPC side. So one, just love the insight, but we're at a neat point here where we can start to look at the team, or we have a kind of a point to get to where do we manage and service our clients, with search experts and programmatic experts or platform independent experts?
I would love to, because Alex would never be able to say things like this. But I can kind of dig in a little bit more and be like, all right, people. So I've worked with brands, I've worked with agencies, right? And the big thing that I'm sure, working through agency, we always complain about is like, guys, we are doing this to the best of our ability, but like we are a subset of your overall presence, right? So in Better Media, right, you are Amazon experts. But if you are in a position where a brand's foundation is they have terrible margins on their products and they're bidding in category when Amazon is like $35 to get a click on a bid and whatever it may be, right? Yes, like Better Media can do it to the best of the ability, but like you've got foundational issues with your brand. You're going to have to raise your prices, become a premium brand so your margin is better, so you're able to spend for those higher CACs, or you've got to produce better content or go external traffic because you can't bid for the traffic on Amazon, right? And so just as Alex was talking about that around like, what is the next, this inflection point? It's like there's so many elements where it's so difficult, I'm sure. But I would just love to kind of be in the room and just being like, hey, what Alex wants to say is like, Go fix your stuff everywhere else and make your brand stronger. And that's going to help us drive more traffic and sales for you on Amazon.
That is about 90% of the client success troubleshooting role. 100%. 100%. So Bobby, question for you, for I think our audience would really appreciate insights on. You've hired a diversity of a wide range of agencies over your time, right? Everything from ad tech to marketing agencies, performance marketing agencies. What are the things that you're looking for when you're vetting a partner to bring on like that?
Yeah, I think the first part is how well they are listening to me. You would be surprised at how many agencies are just like, this is our playbook and we are going to do this exactly. And we don't actually kind of care what you're telling me, because this is the system we're operating in. Right. And that can be good or bad, in the sense of, if you really want to be super hands-off, maybe you want that. But for me personally, having kind of knowledge across these different components, I like to be able to get a sense of them making some considerations for the brands I'm bringing to them, for the services I'm requesting of them. And a second component is not trying to sell me things, right? In the brands I work with now, I've tried to structure, I'm sorry, the agencies I work with now, in a lot of ways, if it's from the performance side, to not have a cut of spend. Because paying for how much you spend always gives the agency incentive to spend more, right? That's not always a bad thing if you trust them, right? But they always have this kind of, like, if you've ever been on the phone with like a Google Ads representative or something like that, they're always like, just run more ads, do this, do that.
Oh, 100%. Right? I'm struggling with my ROAS. Oh, well, maybe if you increase the budget and spend more, it'll learn more to give you a higher ROAS. Like, oh, that's...
And the third thing is, just do they understand your objective? Because I don't think that is always the case. Is what are you trying to accomplish through that agency? I don't know how in your world how different it is, right? But if I come to Better Media and said, like, hey, this is what we want to do with Natural Dog Company, right? How well could they understand what I'm saying and adapt to it when I'm like, we want to try this strategy of spending on salmon oil to do this? What do you think of that? Have you worked with this before, right? So it's not the best short snippet answer. And I don't think there really is one for what to look for in an agency, because you could be looking from anything from, I'm a one-man team, I need help across the board running the whole brand, to I need an expert only in Amazon ad spend, and I want the deepest level we can go. So it's tough to answer from a broad perspective.
No, I think you nailed it. I think even just the first one of, like, are they really listening? I mean, we use a few external service providers for some of the operational facets of our business, and I think all too often you just get into the autopilot of a sales script, a product demo, and then hey, I came into here and I was looking for three things, right? And you covered one of them, but showed me seven other things that I'm not interested about. Are you looking for demonstrated expertise when you're on that sales call, or do you expect to not get that until you start to meet maybe a dedicated account manager? We take a neat approach where a lot of our account management team has kind of raised their hands as they've built audiences themselves outside of Destiny and said, hey, like, we really love this. Like, we love connecting with prospects. We love relationship building. The audit process we built is, like, really cool. We get to give them an action plan. And so as we look at ramping up our sales and BD efforts, we've had a number of account managers on the team raise their hands and say, hey, I'd like to be a bit more of a part of this. And so it's led to us to get some really kind of good early feedback this last month or so of people like, this is like the client, like the prospects love it, because they're not talking to a salesperson. They're talking to an expert. They can right immediately in that call, they can get kind of some of their answers questioned, their questions answered. But I'm curious if, you know, what your thoughts are, and if you appreciate maybe something about the traditional sales cycle outside of that.
Yeah, I think I'll give you an example. I think it was Homestead. There's an agency called Homestead we were working with. And the person I love to hear from the most was someone they didn't usually want to let on the phone. It was someone in the account. He had his background to make it look like he was sitting at a booth at a Denny's when he would get on the call. And he was not our sales rep or accounts rep or whatever you want to call it, right? He was the person in the ad platforms actually doing the experiments, actually kind of managing budgets and whatnot. Yeah. And so that's always the case, is if I can speak to someone, because once again, if you have the familiarity with the systems, everything from implementing attribution tracking stuff like Rockerbox or Triple Whale or Elevar, right? A lot of times the first person you speak to can't answer any of your questions. And it's just like, yep, they just have a sales script. And it's like, just put me on the phone with the person. I already did my research, right? Like if I'm talking, 100%. If I'm talking to you, I've seen your website or looked at your list of clients or whatever it may be. And I'm talking to you for a reason. And I just want to see where you're at, what you can do. And the big thing is, and not so much for agency, but systems and tech outside checkout, is pricing. It's like, I just want to know what it costs, right? Like if I call you and I have to set up a demo that's 2 hours and you have a competitor that's like, oh yeah, this is what we'll charge you, it's very likely I'm going to go that route if possible.
Same sentiment. I agree. I hate paywalls and calls to get to a price is frustrating. Oh, cool. Thank you.
Looking at, you know, all this growth that you guys had across multiple teams, working with experts, generalists, how do you stay up to speed on, you know, the cutting edge, you know, innovations and technologies? We're just within advertising, and seeing the new betas and rollouts every day can be overwhelming. So you at the very, very top of all these marketing initiatives, how do you stay up to date? How are you fed with all this these new ideas?
It's mostly just digging around in things, right? So being in the systems, I will have a lot of people I know, like Alex and other people across the industry that we have conversations. I will kind of reach out. I'm in a few think tanks, kind of the select groups where people are saying like, hey, here's this new software. Has anyone used it? What are the results? Or can you recommend anyone in this category? It's like a vendor. And so staying ahead of all those technologies, I try to always respond and keep kind of, I don't know what you call it, access to the larger organizations. When I was at Elements Brands, we were very involved in like all of the Amazon alphas and betas. So when attribution tracking was first being a thing, when they were trying to launch physical stores like pop-ups, when, you know, all of those roll out. And the same thing in Shopify right now. I've kind of worked with their development team and done some surveys with them around like, what is the aspect of Shopify Collective that's launching. And so it's really a broad spectrum. But it's, I, because I don't have to be specific in any one area, I get to reach across the board, because my job is more so, what is wrong with the business? How can we fix it? How do we scale? And in that sense, I don't need to know, like the Alex used the 80-20 earlier. I don't need to know the 20%, because we're going to get 80% of the way there. And if we need an expert to get that last 20%, then we'll go there.
Totally. So I think a question that both brands and advertisers should get value out of is, how do you, looking across so many new things every day, how do you not get caught up in shiny object syndrome?
Yeah, I think one thing that I have always been good at is because I have to get so much done with a limited amount of resources, it's just a push it out there. And so like, I'll take another step back from this. And I don't think a lot of people think about this. So it's a very basic concept. But like, if there is something you can spend time or money on that has a long-term impact that you don't have to keep spending to achieve, you typically want to start there, right? Like a website redesign to improve UI, UX, and conversion rate is, you know, $60,000, let's say. That is going to be infinitely more impactful than spending ads to drive traffic there forever, right? Because it increases the value of all of the money you are spending. And so in focusing on those areas, you get these points of like, we get this project done, we can measure the impact, and let's move on to the next one. I developed a whole system, and we won't go into it here. I have a terrible naming convention. I should name them something more enticing. But it was just called the CMN, which was the Capability Maturity Model, and literally went through and kind of at a brand stage is at this point in its life, these are the basic e-commerce functionalities that need to exist for this brand at this point. And then as the brand develops in complexity and revenue, you expand out the maturity model to another level and say, okay, now we need to focus on this, right? So it's a kind of happy medium of systems that I've built and just the structure of how you need to operate in the marketing and e-commerce state to stay with the times, basically.
Yeah, keep your priorities right in front of you and understand what's important now to set up future success. Totally get that. So I want to transition into a new topic here. Number one here, what are brands missing or misinterpreting in the world of digital marketing right now?
Yes. So I'm going to start at kind of the history and then move from there. So easy money was where it was at when Amazon, the people operating there, for example, everyone didn't have A-plus content. Everyone didn't know how to use the back end of the systems. There weren't as many people bidding, so you could actually pay for more advertising because your CPCs weren't so high. But then across the spectrum, it was, you know, in the kind of e-com bro world, Facebook and Instagram were known as like a money printer from about 8 to 3-ish years ago. And so where I'm going with this is you get these people that had terms like growth hacker, right? And that doesn't really mean anything. All that meant was like, there was a channel or platform that the rest of the environment or ecosystem hadn't caught up to yet, and you were just exploiting it until that point. And so now we've reached the point where it feels like you need to go and pick up like an Ogilvy on advertising book from however many years ago, because that's what we're back to, right? There's no more like, oh, here's this platform that no one's on, or here's this way I can just pay for ads really easily and drive a bunch of sales. It's like, no, you have to have an actual brand. You have to be following these fundamentals like we talked about. And so what I think brands are missing is that there's not easy money like it used to be. So you need to step back and look at your total, not even I'll say marketing, but really like your business operations perspective that I kind of mentioned previously is, how are we positioned? Because you can't be a low cost product spending a bunch of money, right? And you need this core element of how are we getting traffic if you can't just pay for it easily? And so example here is, you know, I work a lot in the coffee and beverage space right now. It's a super legacy environment. So it's really interesting to use technology, right? One of the big systems that's been helpful here is Postpilot, which is an integration with Klaviyo and Shopify that sends out actual direct mail pieces that you can put into your acquisition campaigns of being like, we sent them this email, they didn't open it. If they never open it, send them now literally a piece of direct mail to their establishment and try to get the conversion that way. And also just kind of cold outreach email campaigns. I'm sorry, not email campaigns, direct mail campaigns, right? And so that is not going to work for everyone. But like, you have to find your acquisition channel, and it's going to be unique for your demographic and company type, right? You can't be an anti-aging skincare brand to 55 plus demographic and be on TikTok likely, right? In the same way, I was just talking about direct mail for coffee. So I think foundationally, and that's why you've seen a lot of these larger e-commerce brands that VCs picked up and were valued at hundreds of millions of dollars, now being like, oh, we never had a like true functional company. We had this one hack on this growth channel, got over evaluated, and now we're either going bankrupt or getting sold for pennies on the dollar.
This to give it a polite term, this growth hacking is an opportunity arbitrage, right? Where the people that are at the forefront, like lean, these lean, nimble teams that we've kind of all, I mean, Justin, your background is similar. You were growing private label brands before joining us, right? When you've got just like two or three people, you know, running 7-8 figure businesses, you can find these and jump on them a lot quicker than your legacy, even agencies, right? Then they'll move on it, then your brands, then all the way till you get to your Johnson & Johnson's and P&G's of the world. And those slowly dwindle away, forcing you to go back to the basics. And it's like kind of the same conversation of like, how did we make an impact with Natural Dog when we first got started? Back to what then is the Amazon basics, as Bobby's talking about now, like direct mail is actually like a really great way to get in front of people's eyes, right? Especially like our generation, right? I get nothing good in the mail. So 20% off coupon like feels really cool. It feels really special to receive. Bobby, your outlook on the industry as a whole, do you see, you know, for those that love those attention grabbing hooks or hacks, like, do you feel like there's an opportunity arbitrage that we're in right now? Like, I think one that we're all probably thinking of is TikTok Shop. We're not dabbling much in that. We've seen some clients have some great success, but are there any of those right now that you feel like are in a good position to leverage?
Man, can I, the first thing that pops to mind, I don't know if it'll be weird or not, but I'm going to like turn the mirror back on Better Media. Like I have always been kind of interested and impressed by the strategy because it is a, how are you acquiring customers, right? It's providing value and content. And you do that through a lot of ways, right? You do that through offering audits. You do that through social media accounts, especially Destiny. You do that through sending out newsletters, all of these things. And so when I look at it, where I was going is really this kind of brand-facing what is the best way to term this here? I will say having someone on staff that is in themselves an influencer, right, is where I'm going with this, like Destiny, is a huge kind of growth hack in the space of sales, services, agency, experts, anything like that, right? And so until that catches up more, I think that is one of them. And, you know, I think it goes back to that doesn't work if the environment doesn't change, right? Like old agency is spam everyone with cold emails, pick up the phone and call everyone, have somebody on staff that's kind of the networking, schmoozing type of guy in the industry that everyone goes, you know, like that is an outdated acquisition model, right? And so when you think about it's this combination of coming off as having value, especially when we talk about new audiences, you know, with millennial being an old man now, like I am, I find that there is, when speaking to younger generations, authenticity and providing value goes a long way. And you're kind of more old school used car salesman tactics, while they were never that great, are even more ineffective. To kind of bring that back around, it's what can you do that aligns with your company values so that your acquisition channel provides innate value to the customer. Now, you mentioned TikTok Shop. Great. Like, if you are a brand that has a young demographic that has content that's popular on TikTok, you should definitely be doing that. But it's so going back, I know I've been rambling on a while here. I'll finish with this. The going back to the mistakes of brands is don't force where you're not in alignment. And if you say like, oh, there's this new opportunity, there's this new technology, if it isn't in alignment with your brand elements, with what your team is good at, with the opportunities you have, don't move in that direction.
So this is a neat take, because I feel like, especially in the wave of kind of COVID e-com, right? Like, omnipresence and omnichannel has kind of consumed our lives and is like the buzzword of at least the first half of this decade. And I've recently seen a little more of that sentiment. And funny enough, I've seen that across a few influencers on LinkedIn, X, but this idea of like, each acquisition channel has like there's a best place for it, right? Ours is LinkedIn with Destiny, and we've struggled to keep up some avenue of Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. You know, we have some fun ideas on like, you know, maybe doing cultural content on some of those, but what Destiny does on LinkedIn doesn't do as well as Facebook. And so I've seen a little more just acceptance of this mindset that, like, if you can't replicate each channel the way that it needs to be successful there, like the copy pasta of going from one to the other is just like, it's not worth it, right? It's not worth your brand integrity. You can tell when someone copies and pastes and it's not the same. And so rather than this idea of spreading yourself thin for omnipresence, double down on what's working and grow there. And it still leaves you some level of platform risk, which I think as entrepreneurs, none of us love that. But it is cool that I've been getting a little more wrapped up in that world, kind of elsewhere. So hearing you say that, tie it back here is really neat too.
It's the Gary Vee thing is what immediately makes me come to mind on that as a quick confirmation of that, Alex. Remember how his whole thing X years ago was like, have the guy follow me around with the camera. I can't remember his name right now. And we'll chop that content and we'll put it across every different type
yes.
of thing, right?
Yes.
You don't see as much stuff popping up across these things of Gary Vee everywhere, right? Or other people like that, to mm-hmm. your point. It's more like content specifically produced for the channel you are consuming it in. I think that's because how diverse, like YouTube, TikTok, LinkedIn, right? Like your content is going to be drastically different across those three. So just chopping something doesn't work like it used to.
100%.
I think it's about connecting with your audience first and foremost, wherever that audience may be, and attracting people into that fit, and accepting that, you know, we don't fit this audience that lives on this other platform, or not catering to everybody. Finally, last question for you on our last couple minutes here, Bobby, is there a current project you're working on or a business we can shout out and give the spotlight to in our final minutes here?
Yeah, I have been doing a bunch of some pro bono because it's brands that I'm interested in, some kind of consulting work. And, you know, to give you an example, I just dug into a comparison of Universal Analytics data, GA4 data, and kind of Google Ads data to look year to year of this comparison for some brands on where did they go wrong as they switched between these different agencies, and all of that, and be like, look, here's where your direct traffic decreased, here's how your conversion rate was handled, and all that. So as to highlight an example of what I'm looking at when I'm kind of working with my own brands I'm managing or external brands, it's taking that kind of full-scale approach to like, oh, you know, I'm not just going to recommend you run some ads on this platform, or I'm not going to just give you this one snippet. It's like growth and performance marketing to me really means like looking holistically at the business and telling you how you could theoretically scale profitably. And so in saying all that, I'm working on launching a website in the near future. And so drivingforcedigital.com, and that's just going to be my kind of hub for people to reach out, see kind of my thoughts, opinions, where I'm at with my suggestions, and for them to be able to contact me and reach out if there's any chance that they think I can help them. So that's kind of my push at the moment, but not there yet. Hopefully by the time people go to look for it, the website will be up.
Awesome. That's drivingforcedigital.com. We'll throw a link down in the show description for people to click into. And you're on LinkedIn as well, correct? They can reach out and chat with you on LinkedIn.
Correct.
Awesome. Well, thank you, gentlemen, so much for being here today. Happy Friday to you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Happy Friday. This was awesome, guys.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have to kick one of these off again here soon. Well, enjoy your weekends, gentlemen. See ya.
Thanks.
See you guys.